Welcome to the Carpcast. Introducing the two biggest nods that don't use chods. They're old, grumpy, and they're pretty opinionated. Here's your host, it's Mark and Jamie.
So hello and welcome to episode 33 of the Carpcast. How's it going?
It's going great. I've just defrosted.
Yeah, have you been fishing this week?
Yeah, well, I say fishing. I think it was more of a camping trip with rods out, to be honest. Never really felt like I was going to catch, but there's always that outside hope.
Yeah, it's a slim outside hope. I had a similar experience, and I think I'm going to tell you that experience we're going to bring our in-session feature that we do on the Carpcast Extra. We're going to bring it into here, so just so you can get an idea of it. Bearing in mind, it's been bloody cold this week. It was -3 the first night I was there, and it got colder the second night, so it's just going to give you a little teaser and see if you like it. But yeah, we'll check in with me shortly, and hopefully Mark will have some in-session stuff to do later on as the weather warms up.
Yeah, definitely. I'm looking forward to it. I did record a bit of in-session this session, but to be honest, it was a commentary of how many tufties are diving on my spot because not a lot else happened.
So lots and lots of you have downloaded the Carpcast Extra, and we thank you for that. We thank you for supporting us. Really hope you enjoyed the first one. The feedback that we've got been pretty damn good. People seem to like the structure of it, the format, which is good. We'll have a couple of different questions each month, and a host of celebrity anglers kind of answering them questions. What do you reckon we should do next month? I reckon possibly do like scary story.
Yeah, I think I've not listened to them yet. They're obviously on your computer, but you know what you've told me about them. I think we should do that one because I want to hear them.
Yeah, we'll do scary story, and what the other one should we do? We could do fishing injury, but I might save the fishing injury. Yeah. Maybe the one that got away. Hear all the famous angler stories of the one that got away. Yeah, that's what we'll do. We'll do scary story and the one that got away on next month's, and hear a wealth of people like Kevin Nash, Alan Blair, Frank Warwick, Daryl Peck, John Mack,
Ronnie DeGroot.
And Ronnie DeGroot. Give you a little teaser of what's on. If you don't know what we're talking about, then subscribe. Don't be tight. Get your money out and support the Carpcast, because I don't know how you guys feel listening to this, but a lot of people said that last week's show with Kevin Nash was one of our best ones. They're all pretty good, I think. I think we've had some great guests that have been interviewed, but people really seem to like Kevin Nash last week. He'd certainly opened up. I think it was a difference, you know, doing most of it face to face as opposed to doing it over a Skype or phone call, and he's got some stories. We recorded for about 2 hours after the interview, and we didn't record. We chatted for about 2 hours after the interview, and half a dozen times said, "Are we recording this?" No, because some fantastic stories came out. But Kev has kind of made me a promise to come back on fairly regular, possibly even, you know, once a month. Maybe do a feature, the Kev Files or something. But yeah, he's quite keen to come back. So I promise I will get all the stories out of him. But I think people like the old school stuff. They liked hearing about, you know, the Catchem Rod Hutchinson days, and how he met Baysie and stuff. And obviously Baysie's going to be a fantastic one when we do finally get him on. Yes, it was a lot of people saying it was possibly our best Carpcast Extra. So to all you people that said it would go downhill when we started doing the charging extra one, you were wrong, because we want to make everyone as good as it can possibly be.
Let's be fair, there was only a couple of naysayers, but we've proved them wrong.
Yes, as we always will. I aim to prove wrong. I like doing that, being a opinionated arsehole that I am. Carpcast Extra. DNABates.com are a fantastic supporter of the Carpcast. You can get a discount on their stuff by using the code CARPCAST5 when you check out. There will be a little box. You buy something, put all your details in the website and put CARPCAST5 for an extra 5% discount. They do loads of post-free deals. They do all the boilies. You can choose a boilie of your choice, 3K of matching pellets or stick mix, tub of pop-ups or wafters, and 250ml of bait soak. And you can get a 5-key deal delivered straight to your door for $59.99. 10-key is $94.99, 20-key is $149.99, and 50-key is £320. And that's post-free, delivered to your door, and use the code CARPCAST5, and you'll get even more off... off that. You can choose from any of the baits, Secret 7, Nutter S, SLK, or the Ocean X. And at the Northern Angling Show, which is you'll be hearing this on the Saturday of the Northern Angling Show, you can get your hands on the Switch for the first time anywhere in the UK. So they do all the stuff. They do a Zig deal, 2.5 key spud mix, bottle of the sticky sweet liquid, and a pack of Fox Ziggaliners. That's £30 post free, or you can go large for £5 extra. The fluoro pop-up deal is great for this time of year, £25 for 5 tubs of fluoro pop-ups. And again, you get 5% extra off all those prices by using the code CARPCAST5 when you check out. Go to dnabaits.com. Talking about Northern Angling Show, as you hear this, it's going to be pretty much underway. You can buy tickets on the door, you can just turn up. We're going to be there all weekend on our Carpcast stand, are we not, Mark? Hopefully with new merchandise.
Yeah, we're selling hoodies, t-shirts, hats, and preparing to go on stage on the Sunday.
Yeah, we're going to be doing Frank Warwick live on the stage on the Sunday.
Interviewing him. Not quite... Yeah, there'll be children there.
Frank's got some fantastic stories, as you'll know from the Carpcast Extra, if you've heard some of his stories on there. He is a great storyteller. He's got lots and lots of them, a story for everything. He sent me some of his photos over the other day for the stage presentation. Lots of work between now and the show. We may even get this Carpcast out early, actually, on the Friday night. Someone else is going to be at the show. I've been chatting with Mark from Lion Carp this week. Lion Carp they have some very, very high quality rods. No Dower are making the rods from this year. And a lad that's put us onto a lake, John Harrop, he's working on the Lion Carp stand at the Northern Angling Show, and I'm certainly interested to go and check the rods out. So go and find their stand, have a look at them. But I know they're pretty much the highest quality rods money can buy. They've done them to a ridiculous spec. Maybe a spec that I wouldn't necessarily think of going, what's the most expensive rings money can buy? Let's get those guides on. What's the most expensive reel seat money can buy? Right, let's bang one of them on. I think it's probably the ultimate tackle tarts rods, but I'm interested to have a play with them. I think we're going to do a true review on them at some point. I've seen them mentioned on the net a bit, and I think there's a lot of people don't really know what they're about, so I'm going to get a set off them and give them a good testing, I think.
You're going to give them a jolly good thrashing.
Yeah, but yeah, check out the Lion Carp stand. Do you know what we need in the winter? About 2 years ago, 3 years ago, we went to Gran Canaria. I went to carp fishing Gran Canaria, which is Dave and Alison Beecham. I know there's another firm doing something over on Shearer at the minute that we spoke about a few weeks ago, because Kev Hewitt went there on his stag night, didn't he?
It is. It's in Fitchers. He's got married now, so congrats to Kevin, your new wife.
Yeah, super congratulations to Kev. But yeah, I was speaking with Alison on Facebook the other day. I was hoping she might have made it over for the Northern Angling Show, but they can't get over here. I think they are sending some leaflets with the Nash guys and stuff, because all the equipment that they supply is Nash out there. I was just thinking, I get what's called SAD, you know, that where you basically
seasonal affective disorder.
Yeah, and I'm thinking, like,
you get grumpy in the cold.
Yeah, it should be the law that I get some sun some point between January and March, because I really feel like I need it. I mean, I was listening to a Joe Rogan podcast the other day. We're going totally off topic here, but I was listening to a Joe Rogan podcast, and it was one of the more recent ones where the guy, he's got like a health, I don't know if you've listened to it, Mark, he's got a health thingy. They kind of revolutionized like diets and what our body needs and stuff. He was talking about, you know, it used to be if you wanted to lose weight, you really worked on your cardio.
Talking about ketone diets.
Yeah, that's right, the ketone diet.
Yeah, Kyle Kingsbury, former UFC fighter.
That's right, yeah. I listened to that one the other day and I thought it was super interesting. That's somebody that's, you know, coming into middle age and has a bit of a derby, and I'm at my PB weight. Just talking about cutting carbs out and stuff, and, you know, all the bleached white grains, basically, that are really bad for us. He was talking about how important sunlight is, and I was thinking, I really do get, not miserable, but 2 years ago when I went to Gran Canaria, we had a week's carp fishing and we had a week in Tenerife with the missus and kids and stuff, and I was like, why don't I do that every year? And then obviously I spoke to Alison, who runs trips over there, and I'm like, I really need to go. But yeah, if you do fancy, I mean, if we need winter sun and we're a fisherman, want to catch some fish, like, they are some of the nicest, scaliest carp in the world, aren't they, in that shearer in Gran Canaria.
Yeah, they do look nice. That Gomera looks good as well over there.
Yes, well, they do. I think they're called carpgrancanaria.com is their website, and they do trips too. They've got another lake further up the mountain somewhere that I've not been to that's got carp to 40s and stuff that I've seen pictures on. They look really nice. They were like one of the first companies to do trips over there. That you can email them info@costadelcarping.com, and I think I might do that. I really fancy a trip. If we actually make any money at the Angling Show this year, because 4 years in, we still haven't made a profit because of the costs that are involved with putting such a large show on. It's funny, you get people comment on the threads underneath the fishing show. It's like, this should be free. These tackle companies make enough money as it is. I just laugh. I'm like, it costs £126,000 to put this show on, and the actual companies, manufacturers, have no input whatsoever. It's our show, and we book them to appear or sell them floor space. But like, it's nothing. You know, it costs everybody a shit ton of money to be at the show. You know, a company like Nash or Fox, you know, they're putting 20, you know, two vans, loads of gears, 20 staff on the road, hotel rooms, you know, the cost of the floor space is about a third of the overall cost of what it costs them to attend a show. And people just think, oh, it's just, you know, it's like a shop for them to sell gear. And it's kind of not what a show is. You know, it's kind of, yes, you can buy stuff there, but not from the manufacturers. You buy it from the likes of Eric's Angling and Ted Carter's and, you know, and the other shops that we have at the show. But yes, it makes me laugh when I read them comments. Like, this should be free. You're charging a tenner to get in. I'm like, we're 4 years in and have not made 1p profit out of this show yet. And it costs 120 grand a year, or 126, I think, the cost this year to put the show on. But if you would like to go, it's a fantastic day out. The ticket sales are 1,000 tickets up on last year already. And it was anybody that went last year will know it was absolutely rammed. So, yeah, hopefully we make enough money to be able to book a trip in the sun somewhere to stop me being grumpy, because I definitely get SAD. You can get them little machines, can't you? Like them little mini... like face tanners almost, aren't they? I think they're like just rays of sunlight. But yeah, listen to that guy, what was his name again on Joe Rogan?
Kyle Kingsbury.
Yeah, Kyle Kingsbury, he's saying that it's really important, like we need the vitamin D that we get from UVB, is it?
It is, yeah, your body produces its own vitamin D via sunlight, and well, I personally know how important that is. I don't think it's any coincidence that I became quite ill 3 months after starting a new job on permanent nights.
Yeah, so you did.
That's another story, but sunlight is very, very important. And living in Blackpool, I bet you just get rain, because every time I've been there, it's been pissing it down.
It is, yeah. So, yeah. I want to go to Shearer or Gomera or Yeah. Or one of those. In fact, Alan, one of Alan Blair's stories that we recorded for the Carpcast Extra was about Gamera. I won't spoil it. But yeah, they do trips to Gamera. If you do fancy going, let me book first. But yeah, carpgrancanaria.com or info@costadelcarpin.com is the email address. And speak to Dave or Alison because I want to go. And they've got villas up there and all sorts. Another place you can check out for a holiday this year is St. Armand Leisure. Mark and I are checking it out, and we hope we're not going to have no SAD, seasonal affective disorder, because we hope when we go at the end of March that it is sunny. And our women who are coming with us will definitely hope it's sunny, because they don't want to be stuck in the middle of the France if it's raining or cold. But we're going to St. Armand Leisure. Which is starmandleisure.com is the website. You can have a look at their fantastic drone video of the lake and the fantastic farmhouse, 4 double bedroomed farmhouse with loads of facilities, big kitchen, bait freezers, normal freezers, big cookers, satellite TV, table tennis tables, all sorts of games. It's a perfect family holiday, and you will not get a better value family holiday for what, two families? Fit 4, 5, 6 people on the lake, loads and loads of bites, fish to just under £50, and it's £850. You could potentially get what, 10 people, maybe even 12 people at a push on that holiday for £850 for a week. I know it's booked up pretty well. We've got one of them, but if you would like to get involved, you can give Lee a call on his UK mobile, 07854 857 374, or Chris, Christophe's originally French, his family live over there, so if you've got any questions about France itself, he might be your man. You can get him on his UK mobile, 07428 183 018. It's www.starmandleisure.com for the website. You can email him at starmandleisure@yahoo.co.uk. Have a look on our Facebook page for the video. You can basically see everything. It's a very nice place.
It is. Really looking forward to it. I'm also looking forward to you doing this advert in a French accent soon. Saint Armand Leisure.
Leisure. Have we? We're recording this early because of the Northern Language Show, but we've teamed up with Carp Talk this year. We are working together to promote each other, and when our podcast comes out on a Saturday, our weekly one, is the same day that their digital version comes out, and it only costs £1.49 and available from pocketmags.com. You can view it on your Apple device, Android or PC. Obviously, the print version comes out every Tuesday, as it always has done. You can find out where to get that from on the Carp Talk website. There is a stockist locator there, but yeah, you get the digital version to your device for £1.49. It's the full magazine because of modern technology, and because we're recording this early this week because of the Northern Angling Show, we don't have the info on what's up and coming, but what I do know is there's been loads of fish caught, so it's going to be a packed edition as usual. Pocketmags.com, you can get it for only £1.49 delivered direct to your device.
Yes, I get mine downloaded to my iPad. It gives me my carpy fix while I'm at work, supposed to be working.
Have you seen anything on the net?
It's on the net. It must be true.
On the net? Yeah, just one or two couple of things. I mean, it doesn't seem 5 minutes since we recorded it last time. But, yeah, I've seen somebody made a comment on the net about, the etiquette and cliques of claiming swimmer by baiting them. And someone started having a bit of a rant, Jamie.
I love a good old internet debate. Yeah, one of our pals, Mark, Robbo, as he's known, mainly for falling out of the tree and breaking his ribs in on the wall pack.
And driving back home to Manchester before seeking attention.
Yeah, and fortunately, the carp gods repaid him for his injury by giving him paddle not too long after he was all healed up.
I think he'd caught paddle before, and the carp gods punished him by throwing him out the tree.
Oh, had he already caught paddle? Because paddle was like a 50-pound common, extremely. It was kept quiet for some time. That one where we managed to worm our way in there and I didn't catch it before he died, but Robbo did, yeah. And so yeah, that would make sense. I mean, catch big fish, carp gods throw you out the tree. But anyway, yeah, Robbo made a post. I've not got it in front of me, but it was basically along the lines of etiquette with kind of bait and swims. You know, we've seen it on lakes, haven't we, where you kind of pre-bait a swim and it kind of becomes yours, and everybody else is like, well, I better I didn't go in there. Mark's been baiting that every week and he's fished only that swim every week, so we'll just kind of leave him to it. What's your views on said situation?
A bit on the fence, to be honest. But after having had a season on my big pit last year, I only had one baiting up trip in an unfancied swim. I'd seen fish in it, caught half a dozen fish out of there pretty quick, then couldn't get back in. And the first trip I had there of the year, I had somebody warning me off his swim in quite a rude manner, who I can't remember what my reply was, but I think it sounded like duck fluff. But I had a bait boat driven through my swim on there. I'm just going to sound horrible. It is actually a really nice place to fish. But the point I'm going at is, you know, you bait a swim, you take your chances. You know, we've all done it. You keep it quiet, do it a bit discreetly, and just don't expect to claim a swim as your own. You just, it's rude. It's bad. I think it's selfish, to be honest. Yeah. Everyone pays the same price for your ticket.
Yeah, and Mark made the point that I know he was fishing Stone Acres last year, and he said there was a lad that fished a couple of days a week and he'd picked a swim like right out of the way, and he was a really nice lad, and he ended up getting this swim going and catching fish out of it. And you know, the lad did not expect people to leave it for him. You know, apparently he's just a really nice lad who, you know, and the rest of the syndicate thought it was good etiquette to leave him to it. You know, he'd got the peg going and leave him to it, and they never went in it even if they could have done. And he kind of commented, I'm surprised none of you guys have gone in it. And they're like, no man, we'll leave you to it, which I think is all great and nice etiquette, right? And you know, if you did go in it, the geezer's a nice, it sounds like everyone's saying what a nice chap he was, he probably wouldn't have been bothered if he did go in it. That sounds idyllic to me, but that's, yeah, the lad might not have been bothered that you went in the peg, but let's say I turned up and went in the peg, the rest of the syndicate might go, oh, hang on a minute, Jamie's out of order for going in that peg. You know, we've all left nice guy, Mr. Nice Guy, to it. You know, Mr. Nice Guy might go, don't worry, Jamie, you crack on. You know, it's not my peg. We've all paid the same money because he's a nice guy. But the rest of the syndicate might go, that Jamie's a bit snide. He shouldn't have gone in there. All of a sudden, there's a bit of bad feeling. Maybe I don't get my ticket renewed next year because I didn't kind of fit in with the clique. All of a sudden, a situation's been claimed. Mr. Nice Guy wasn't bothered. A situation's been caused by the fact that somebody kind of... Mr. Nice Guy hasn't actually reserved the swim because he's not bothered if anyone goes in there. He's just gone and done his own thing. It's everybody else that's kind of reserved the swim for him by saying, no, mate, you crack on, we'll leave you to it. Kind of nobody's at fault here. Mr. Nice Guy is definitely not at fault. You know, the syndicate aren't at fault for going, let's leave Mr. Nice Guy to it. And I'm not at fault for going in a peg that, you know, I fancied going in because there was fish there. Yet there's a potential for bad feeling to be caused, and everything's kind of human nature. So it's just a sticky wicket. I on my lake,
a sticky wicket.
But yeah, because my rule is, you shouldn't be allowed to pre-bait if you're not in the swim fishing. You know, you shouldn't be allowed to bait up when you leave, and you shouldn't be allowed to bait up when you're not there. You know, on a syndicate, on a lake that's busy, if you go and find a lake in the middle of nowhere and it's only you fishing it, or you and a mate or whatever, then, you know, it's kind of different. But I think on a lake that's busy, which is any circuit water, most club lakes, like, you just shouldn't be allowed to pre-bait. Definition of pre-baiting is putting bait in when you're not fishing, or, you know, or when you're leaving. You know, like, I've seen people do it when the rods are still on lakes that have a no pre-baiting rule. You know, like, say they're leaving at midday at 10 a.m, they'll fill it in, like, even though the rods are in the water, so they're technically not leaving. You know, they're technically not pre-baiting because they're fishing, and then they just go home. Obviously, when you have rules, some people will bend those rules as much as they possibly can. So, you know, if that was going on, I'd have a, you know, no baiting on the day that you're leaving. But then what if you're catching loads of fish and you just keep topping up until you leave? I don't know. A no pre-baiting rule and a no rotating swims rule kind of stops any bad feeling. Even if there was no intentional reserving of pegs, like, it just kind of stops it. And I don't know, I think you have to kind of have them rules to stop potential problems happening.
Yeah, I think on a busy lake, it would be a no pre-baiting rule. Is it's going to stop arguments. Then you turn up, you use your watercraft and create your feeding situation there and then to catch fish.
Again,
we all know how effective pre-baiting is done right, and if I was on a lake with that sort of rule, it's pissing it down 2 o'clock in the morning, guess what I'd be doing?
Well, that's the difference. If you want to break the rules, you know, or if you do want to pre-bait a peg, like, the best thing to do is to not tell anybody for lots of reasons. You know, you can't have the ump when somebody goes in there thinking that they'd just seen you fill it in and they've gone in there to kind of reap the rewards of your work. I mean, that can't happen because they wouldn't have known you put the bait in. So, I mean, Stoney sounds like it had a nice group of lads and sounds like, you know, nothing untoward went down whatsoever. So, you know, credit to those guys. But I've been on other lakes, one of them being the Manchester Park Lake. I think I've mentioned this before. There were 6 swims. I'd turn up on a Monday, there's not a single person on the lake, and there were 6 swims that I knew were being baited and regularly fished. And it might be Monday, and I knew a guy, he did one night a week on a Wednesday, and he would come at the weekend. And there were fish showing in front of the peg, and I felt like I couldn't go in it. And I felt if I did go in the peg, and I caught the big one, which was Mr. Angry, I'd get slated for it. So it was like I just wanted the other people to catch the big ones and do one so that, you know, I could have a go at the lake with a fair playing field. But there were half a dozen pegs that I felt like I couldn't go in. And that's what happens when one person does it. I mean, this Mr. Nice Guy, he's obviously had a few fish. What happens if next year, if somebody else goes, right, well, I'm going to pick a peg and bait it all year, and then another guy goes, yeah, well, that worked for Mr. Nice Guy last year, I'm going to do it. All of a sudden, you've got 3 pegs that, you know, that are kind of, you know, at what point do you draw the line? Like, if one guy is doing it, and, you know, any half-decent anglers are going to go, oh, that really worked, like, we'll do it, you know, as you would. All of a sudden, you do have issues, you know, where you don't want to be turned up. Everyone pays the same money. When you pay your 600 quid a year, 500 quid a year, whatever it is, you don't rent a piece of space that becomes yours, you know, on that lake. You know, I think it should just be a fair playing field for everybody. I think you should turn up, be able to go wherever you fancy, and fish within that peg and go home, you know, and come back, do the same again.
Yeah, if you want to bait up, don't get monk on if someone else fishes it, and certainly don't expect people to leave it alone, especially if you turn, you know, like Jamie just said, if you turn up to a lake, all the fish in one swim, you don't want to feel obliged not to fish it. But do you remember the incident you had on the Woolpack?
Go on.
With Hair Bear Bunch, who was moaning at you for fishing next door to the swim he was baiting.
I don't remember that. No, bearing in mind the Woolpack was a very small lake. It was like kind of, I don't know how many acres it was, not many, but it had like an island, a long cigar island that ran down the full length of the lake. So it was
on pit 6, which is basically, it's like a canal.
Yeah, you're basically fishing a canal. It's like 30 yards to the other side, if that. If not less, so. And there were, what, 4 pegs down each side? 5 pegs? Down each side, yeah, of this canal?
Yeah, I think about 5 or 6. And the only reason it sprung to my mind is, although I've not seen this fella for a good few years, but last time I seen him was, you know, 2 years afterwards, and he was still mentioning it. It's like, oh, just get over it.
So he was baiting one of these 5 pegs, and like, I didn't go in the peg, I went in the one next door, and I was still out of order. I mean,
yeah,
so I, you can't go in the one he's baiting, you can't go in the one next door. So he's just took 2/3 of, he's took 2/5 of the lake out the game, and presumably,
yeah, pretty much,
and presumably you can't go the other side either. If you can't go in the one next door, well, there's obviously a next door each side of his peg, so 3/5 of the lake he doesn't want you to fish because he's baiting.
Yeah, that was it.
Yeah, and whinged. I mean, I didn't even know. He didn't even whinge to me about it. As usual, two-faced syndicate fishing.
Yeah, I've just texted you his name anyway.
Yeah, I saw it ping through. We're not going to publicly out anybody because life's too short to be worried. But this is the point. Like, so, I mean, I don't even remember this happening.
Yeah, it was pretty much a non-incident, but I know the Wolfpack, I've heard one or two other incidents, and again, we'll not mention any names, but I don't want an angler try to bully his way around a few of the anglers on there. Never tried it with either of us, funnily enough.
No, it was like the same guy that when I had one of the big mirror in there, which was about 46 pounds in the winter, all of a sudden a lead came flying into my peg just as it was on the bank getting photographed.
No.
Oh, it wasn't him?
No, it was a fellow who caught the big common and claimed it over 50 and refused to re-weigh it in front of witnesses. But again, that's another story we'll not go into.
We love syndicate politics. See, life's too short now. I'd have got involved years ago, but I don't actually care.
We don't want to fish the Wolfpack ever again, do we?
Well, I mean, the Wolfpack is an absolutely fantastic fishery. And Andy, who owns it and runs it, is a lovely fella. So I have nothing bad to say about that place. I really enjoyed my time on there. It was a bit of carp fishing heaven. You go down a private track and you're locked in the gates and there's a number of quality lakes in there, and they're all small and intimate, and used to have a lot of trees. I think he cut a lot of them down for
you're making his wind tunnels.
Yeah, but you know, it's a fantastic complex, and I believe there's a fair few big fish in there still, isn't there?
Oh, definitely. You know, is one or two every now and then a fish will appear on my Facebook feed, and you know, I'll recognise it, and you know, it generally doesn't get named. And you say, I know what you are. You know, a fish that was like, you know, maybe up at 20 or low 30 when we were up there is nudging 40. You know, it's good to see. Say, Andy's a nice fella, and you know, and he's put a lot of work into that complex. I mean, just that otter fence alone must have put a good dent in his wallet.
Yeah. Anyways, we've been rambling a lot on this. Should we move on?
Yeah, we have.
Something else on the net.
It's on the net. It must be true.
Yeah, I think this is worth the mention. We all use laser pens to scare the tufties on their spots. Well, just be careful. A Virgin Atlantic flight to New York has been forced to return to Heathrow after a laser beam was pointed at the plane, prompting urgent action in the cockpit.
Yeah. I've never obviously had a laser pen shone in my eyes at that kind of distance, but I imagine it's quite bright. You know, I've seen people shine them across the other side of a lake, and they've shined it in my bivvy and stuff. And you know, I don't think it'd make me crash a car if I was driving. But I don't, you know, when somebody's shining it, what, maybe a mile up in the air into a cockpit. I mean, I remember a few years ago somebody got jailed for it for 2 years. They consider it a terrorist attack.
Yeah, I've got that news report up on my screen right now. We've got published October 16th, 2014, jail for angler who shone laser into cockpit.
Yeah, I think they arrest you under the Terrorism Act.
Yeah, he got a year for it.
Yeah, I mean...
So it's a pretty serious offence.
Well, you know what it's like when you've got on them laser pens, like, it's quite fun shining them around, isn't it, seeing how far they go into the sky. I mean, you might... There are a lot of planes in the sky at any one time. You might inadvertently shine it towards a plane without even knowing. I mean, what must that look like? If you're coming into, say, Manchester Airport and somebody's just on a random lake in Manchester shining it into the sky, I mean, how far away do you reckon you can see that if you're in a plane? I mean, it probably doesn't have to be that close to you to, you know, be seeing a great big green beam shining vertically upwards past the plane onto the clouds or whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, sure probably don't do it. I mean, a lot of the ones that I've seen, the super powerful ones, they're illegal anyway. The actual legal allowed limit of those is very low. The majority of them kind of black pen type looking ones that everyone, you know, the slightly rubberized case that everyone was selling, I mean, they're definitely illegal, ones that have been imported from abroad. So the fact that it's a terrorism offence and you just don't want to be caught with one.
I don't own one of those, honestly.
No, I used to, and when it broke, I did not get another because I don't know, it's not the sort of thing you want to be carrying about. if you do get nicked. So I don't know, but yeah, be careful if you do have one. And I've always worried that the way they scare the bird life to death, I've always worried what it does to fish under the surface. You know, do they get scared shitless? So you know, more than anything else, it's does it scare the fish is the reason why I don't have one.
So yeah, because I can imagine if you're scaring a load of bird life off the surface, you know, it's all, you know, half a dozen tufties all taken off at once. You know, because sound travels through water 3 times quicker than air. The fish are going to know something's wrong. There is a good chance it could put them on edge.
Very true.
So, yeah.
Very true.
Yeah, I'd rather have a few tufties diving on my spot, because there's so much that they can tell you.
Listen to the Carpcast on iTunes and subscribe through the podcast app on your iPhone or iPad. For Android users, find us on the Stitcher Radio app. Go to Google Play and download Stitcher Radio for podcasts. Add us to your playlist and click listen to hear us anytime you like. Don't forget to enable offline listening if you wish to save your data on the bank. We're also available on the SoundCloud app under the Carpcast, or check our website at www.thecarpcast.com. Remember, listening through an app will recall where you were up to when you get that screamer. Or you could always make a whip. The fish, of course.
All right, let's check in on the in-session feature.
In session.
I must be mad. It's Saturday. Saturday evening, 9 p.m. I had the urge to go fishing this afternoon. I was sat at home. I wasn't intending on fishing this week, as you'll know from the last podcast. But I don't know, I was at home. I mean, it's the day before Valentine's Day. The missus is not particularly over the moon. She had a nice meal and stuff planned tomorrow night, but we are hunters, we are carp anglers, and I haven't felt so hungry to go fishing in a few years, so I made the most of it. So I sat there and thought, should I get my gear ready, drive to the secret lake. It's about a 3-hour drive. I knew I was going to be arriving in the dark, whatever happened, because this is like 4:30 this afternoon when I'm having these thoughts. And I've decided, sod it, it's not too difficult a lake to get sorted in the dark. There's quite a few lights around it, you can see your lead land. And, you know, I used to do this a lot many years ago when I was keen. I used to arrive fishing after DJing on a Sunday night. I used to arrive at, you know, 2 a.m. and get 4 rods sorted. So I thought, that's exactly what I'm going to do. So I'm about 3 or 4 minutes away. I've not eaten, I still need to find something to eat. I've just missed the local chippy by about 5 minutes, unfortunately. Well, it's 1 minute past nine now, and it's short of nine, I'm 5 minutes away. So unfortunately, I have missed that. But the weather's, everything is looking rubbish. So I don't even know why I'm doing this. Like, the moon phase, rubbish. Every day on the moon cal is showing bad fishing conditions. The weather showing -3 Sunday and Monday night. It's not great today. It's going down to 2 degrees tonight. It's 4 degrees now as I approach the lake. But I don't know, something just made me want to go. I don't know why, I must be mad. Tipping up in February, when we got 3 days of cold weather on a shallow lake. expecting to black and getting there in the dark. I must be slightly mad. But maybe the carp gods will reward me. Maybe the anti-carbs. I don't know which one to pray to yet, the good side or the dark side. Well, let's see what happens.
I really am mad. Just got 3 rods out. I'll put a 4th out tomorrow. Put them out really rough style. Just wrapped them to like 10 wraps straight out in front. And it's not particularly clean. I don't think I'm fishing the area that I wanted to fish.
which I fish where I had all the bites last time I was here. I was fishing kind of long with that rod, but it's where I was fishing to. It's actually just in front of this peg somewhere, but I don't know exactly where because it's dark. I've never fished it from this angle before, but I wanted to fish right here. It's nearer to the car park. It's just a little lob out in front, rather than 21 wraps from the other peg. You know, this is like 8 or 9 wraps probably, but I haven't found the spot. I had a quick lead around, and I've just found somewhere where the lead went down, but I put 3 rods on the same clip, all with like literally a handful of bait around each. Yeah, just fishing straight boilies on my normal rigs. Got 1 pop-up rig, 2 snowmen balance rigs with me, with the cultured hook baits, and just a stick to, threaded down the hook link, just to make sure that it's presented really where it's landed. But I feel like I'm fishing really rough. I feel like I'm really fishing blind. But it's midnight, it's very cold, and they've had a hell of a lot of water here. The rain must have been unreal because the roads all nearby were flooded. The lakes, the water's up. You know, it's flooded in areas around the corner of the lake. It's come up at least a foot since I was last here. And it's extremely wet and muddy. Like everywhere I'm coated. I'm sat here thinking I'm shattered now, it's midnight, it was a long drive, so it is a bit of a night water, and I don't know if I want a bite. Kind of sat here thinking I'm crazy, what am I doing, I just want to go to sleep. So I think I'll compromise. I settle for like 4 hours sleep and then get woke up by a screamer, and I think I'll have my energy back by then. That'd be nice. Wishful thinking. But we can hope. Right. Well, hopefully, I'll just see you in the morning. I'll have a nice little kip and fish properly tomorrow.
In session.
Yeah, we'll keep going with that. What should we do now?
Well, I think the return of top trumps went down quite well on the last one. Should we give it another go? Or the one before last
year? Yeah, I've been doing venue top trumps, haven't we?
Yeah, we even had a chat this week. Yeah, we could do, you know, obviously, carp top trumps, tackle top trumps, any top trumps.
That's the beauty of top trumps. Okay, day ticket lakes. It's your first pick, isn't it?
Yeah, I think what we're going to do, I'm going to take orchid. That's been chucking out a lot of good fish lately.
Okay, if you're doing orchid, I think I'm somewhere else that's got massive winter form, just like orchid, and I've seen Lee Morris on there doing his live videos and stuff this week. He's been hauling his farlows in the Cone Valley.
Yeah, that's a historic place. There is.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so we mark out of 10. We do 5 categories. We do the lake record. We do the stock of the lake, like the overall stock. We do the difficulty. We do the amenities, and we do the price. We'll score them all out of 10. You got a pen, Mark?
No.
I don't think I have. Let me squeak my chair a bit more. Find an envelope to write on. British Gas, that'll do. Okay. You have an orchid. I'm having farlows. Let's start off with... So what's the late record of orchid?
It's 40 plus. I've just recently seen that EastEnders actor. Is
it Scott Maslin?
Scott Maslin, yeah. He's just recently had a scrape of 40. I do remember it doing a £40 common years gone by. Arnie, I believe.
Yeah, it's done fish to low 40s, hasn't it? Every year, I think it does.
Yeah.
And the late record for farlows is about the same, isn't it? It's like 41.
Yeah, common, I believe.
So, we're going to give you a 7 and me a 7.5. Because 41's bigger than 40, right?
Well, it was last time I went to school.
Okay, the overall stock.
Overall stock. I think you're looking up to 40 30s in Orchid. It is home of the 30s. and 200 to 300 carp up to a 30.
That's pretty well stocked. That's, like I say, it does fish extremely well in the winter. I don't know if it's just because it's shallow. We spoke about shallow lakes last week, but yeah, it's it does seem to kick into gear, and it's done a ridiculous amount of fish this winter. And Farlow's, I know it's heavily stocked. It's always been heavily stocked since I was in my early 20s, used to go on there. It's got lots of 30s with another 5 to 10 expected to go 40.
Wow, that is an impressive stock.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably similar, isn't it? I think we give them, what, an 8 each?
Yeah, I think if you look, you know, per acre...
Yeah,
they are going to be pretty similar.
Yeah, definitely.
Which, as we move on to difficulty, I think this could be a draw as well, because I don't think either of them are a pushover, but you get it right on the right day, you can fill your boots.
Yeah, like I say, I've fished both lakes. I've never had much out of Orchid, to be fair. I mean, I've not fished it for about 10 years, but I used to fish Farlow's a lot, because I had a... I had a ticket that covered like all the waters that they had. I fished Rodney Meadow at the time, but we used to fish
Boyer.
Yeah, the Boyer Leisure one.
Boyer Leisure.
So yeah, I fished there quite a bit, and it was always good for a bite. It certainly wasn't in the hard category. You know, in the sort of easy side of moderate. And like I say, Orchid, I think you have to be doing it right. I don't think they just crawl up the rods. You know, like a Drayton Manor type place.
Now, neither of these places are a Drayton, but, you know, they hold a lot bigger fish.
Yeah, so we'll give them like a 7 each, maybe?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Okay. And the amenities, I'll go first with Farlow's. I'm aware of the amenities on there. I mean, one of the attractions for us many years ago fishing it was the bar that was sat bang smack in the centre of the point bit. I mean, I don't actually know if it's still there. Let's find out. But I mean, that was I've staggered out of there and pub chucked many times over the years. many times. I believe there always used to be a tackle shop on there. You could get food and stuff. Obviously there's toilets going round. What about Orchid? What facilities we got there?
Orchid has got brilliant facilities. It has a superb angler's lodge, ladies and gents disabled toilets, together with shower for those wishing to spend a bit longer on the bank. The lodge has a cafe where you can talk carp over a cup of tea, and the local Chinese and pizza will deliver to the main gate, and they will also drive your gear out to your swimming is 4x4 thing for you.
Well, Farlow's has all of that, shower and toilet facilities. It's brand new. It's recently been rebuilt. There's a fantastic, well-equipped cafe, provides hot and cold food, teas and coffees and much more. I mean, they've always had a cafe and bar on there. But now Eric's, which I'm presuming is the reason why it's all brand new, Eric's have built a 2,500 square foot tackle shop. And has every single brand you could dream of. I mean, it's kind of above and beyond. I spoke to Sam, who owns Eric's, last year at the angling show, and he believes the future of angling shops is on busy day ticket complexes. Can you imagine if there was an Eric's or similar shop on the Oxford, what's it called?
Linear
complex. I mean, that.
Oh, you need an alpha brain.
That would be, yeah, that would be unreal. But yeah, I mean, I think Farlow's has got to be a 9 here. It takes some beating. A 2,500 square foot shop, brand new built shower, state of the art toilet, and the cafe. I think.
Yeah, I may have to concede on that one, although. I mean, said that Orchid comes second, it's by no way a degradation of the services they've got there. It's two of the best.
No, it's going to be an 8. It's certainly up there.
Yeah. Oh, without a doubt.
Yeah, that's cool. Okay, and...
The price.
The price. Do you know what Orchid is?
I do. It's £25 for 24 hours.
Fantastic value. It's got to be an 8, I would have thought.
And fallows.
£25 for 24 hours. That is also an 8.
That. Yeah, I think that should be a 7, because if I were to fish there, I'd have to drive more and spend more on fuel.
That is not the fault of the lake. So, 8 plus 9 is 17. Plus 7 is 24. Plus 8 is actually 32. 39.5. I believe you are 1.5 less.
Have you added it up correct this time?
Yes. So this week's Carp Top Trumps winner, by a smidgen, is Farlow's. Yay!
Looking a very close second.
Yeah, is that 2-0? By any chance?
Carp Top Trumps!
You had first choice as well.
I'm not counting. I had first choice. I've looked into all these. I've still got the wrong bloody one.
Cool.
We'll have to have a county top trumps, because we know Yorkshire beats everything.
Let's check in with me on the session once again.
In session.
So it's 3 p.m. on Sunday afternoon. I've not been here 24 hours yet, but I feel like I'm actually fishing for the first time right now. I moved to the gap to the right of where I was for a better line angle at the spot. I wasn't actually fishing on the correct spot last night. I was fishing at about 11 wraps, and after having a proper lead around today, I found out the spot I needed to be fishing is 13 wraps. And that was the spot I was fishing from a different peg. But obviously it was hard to tell at night. I just found around. I mean, I was angling in a cleanish area last night, but it wasn't where I've had bites from previously. So I feel like I've just started the session now. Still bitterly cold. It's a northerly wind. It's a clear sky. My hands are numb. It's feeling pretty pony, but you know, you've got to choose your lake carefully, and this lake has been doing fish all winter, so there's definitely a chance. There's some lakes I'd feel like it, I might as well just go home, but I don't really feel like that on here. Fish haven't been fished for much at night, ever, and it's quite shallow. It's got all the boxes that need ticking for winter water. It's kind of seems to have a decent stock of fish. It's shallowish, and you know, the fish are pretty naive to being fished for, certainly at night. So all those are good signs of somewhere that's worth fishing in the winter. So we're fishing, the rods are out, what can we do? We can't do any more. So see what tonight brings. I decided to redo my rods just before dark. It's about 8 p.m. now. It's very cold, it's -2, but I decided to redo them all just before dark, and put my right hand rod out first, which was, I'm kind of the main zone, the only place I can get like a solid bump, that I found last time I was here when I had all the bites. There's definitely a bite spot, because the fish must have made it that hard. You can't find anything that hard anywhere else. So put it out, 13 reps it is. Put it out, and it bumped down with a nice-ish thud, good enough to leave. Like it was a good bump for this lake, although not the ultimate bump. It was only when I was setting the bobbin I realised that I put it on the wrong tree. I put it on there, there's like lights behind the trees, and I put it on the right-hand white light instead of the middle white light. Didn't realise till I'd done it, but thought, I've found a new spot then. Because, like I say, it was a decent enough bump for this lake. I mean, it could have gone through a middle of a pile of Canadian for all I know, because I've not put a rod there before, but it felt like it bumped down all right. So, and it was about 20 yards to the right of where it should have been. So I just moved all my rods over once, put my middle rod to where it should have gone. That bumped down nice. And then I put a pop-up rig just to the left of that one, which didn't bump down so nice, bumped down fairly soft. But it's on a pop-up anyway, and it had a bit of foam around it, so it's staying there. My left-hand rod's in the long spot over the other side of the lake, just a bit of a chuck it and chance type spot. But I know it is a spot that's done bites in the past, but I think it might have been picked up off ducks off that already. But I've got four rods out. Like I say, it's very cold, it's minus two, so I'm not expecting much, except I've just seen on Facebook quickly it's flashed up that Ian Stott's had another fish out of a wellie, I presume, because it was a pretty decent sized fish, and that was 6 minutes ago from now. So if they're feeding somewhere, hopefully they'll feed here at some point tonight.
In session.
Well, we're on our way home with our tail between our legs. Could have stayed another night, but in hindsight, not a mistake coming, because there's never mistakes go fishing. I feel totally refreshed, had loads of sleep, but and it was too cold for the fish, such a shallow lake. Probably knew that before I came, but I had that urge to go. But at least I know now. I've learned something. I know that it was probably a waste of time. It's going even colder tonight. It's going to minus four tonight. The ground was solid by 11 p.m. last night. I've just waited. I've given it till sort of one in the afternoon. Let the sun get on the water. It's on the off chance. But I found a new spot to the right, although accidentally. Found some nice spots in the right and margin as well. That'll certainly fish when it warms up a bit. And I've had a couple of nice days fishing, although a little bit crazy. But that's what we do. We're hunters.
In session.
Not all sessions are going to be bangers. I mean, I just had the urge to go fishing, so we document it, and hopefully Mark's going to do some in-session stuff in the near future. I know you actually started recording this week, didn't you? But you were just reporting on Tufties.
Yeah, I'll be honest, I could have maybe tried a little bit harder this session, but after, you know, 10 days at work, I was just relaxing a bit.
Yeah, it's not going to be great every week, but like I say, we quite like documenting it, and we have to document every session, because that one session where we catch the big one or something goes really right, it's all going to already be there recorded. So yeah, it's all good. Like I say, you might even get this show early. I might even release it Friday, just because it's a Northern Angling Show this weekend. You can still get tickets online, northernanglingshow.co.uk. If you go to the northernanglingshow.co.uk website, there's a countdown timer. I'm going to do it right now and get scared, because every time I look at it now, it gives me palpitations for the weekend that's coming. So while the page is just loading up, it's going to give me some horrible information. But yeah, you can get tickets in advance. The advance tickets get you in at 9 a.m. There's going to be ridiculous queues on the Saturday, so I remind you again, it opens at 9. Get in there at 7 a.m. It is supposed to be raining this weekend as well. We're not going to let you in. It's like, it opens at 9. Do not go outside at 7 a.m. There is nothing on. There is nothing that you won't miss. There's no like deals that are only on for the first half an hour. There's just zero gain to get in there at 7 a.m. You know, turn up at 9. You'll be in by 20 past, even with the queue. I know people will still come at 8 o'clock anyway, but there's pressure on us to let people in if it's chucking it down with rain, and it just causes chaos. We can't have 1,000 people inside, you know, in the entrance lobby, while we're trying to get everything set up. So please, just you can get in at 9 if you bought a pre-sale ticket. 3 days, 16 hours, 5 minutes and 38 seconds, 36, 35, 34. It's counting down. We're scared. But yeah, northernanglingshow.co.uk. You can pay on the door. It's only a tenner on the door. Under 12s are free. There's a discount for kids between 12 and 16 and OAPs as well. I forget how much it is, but it's definitely cheaper than a tenner. Everybody's there. Everyone who's anyone is there. All the big brands. Loads of people on stage. The Carpcast Live are on stage on the Sunday. We've got a Carpcast stand there all weekend where you can come and get some merchandise. If you wish to subscribe to the Carpcast Extra, you can do so at thecarpcast.com. and come and see it. It's an absolutely fantastic weekend. It's right by the Trafford Centre at Event City in Manchester, so you can send the missus shopping, give her your credit card, you keep the spare credit card to buy yourself a new bivvy or a new set of rods or pretty much
or
anything.
Soft hoodies and t-shirts.
Hoodies and t-shirts, yeah. Yeah, Mark will be on the stand most of the weekend. I'll be on it as much as I can. I'm hosting the main stage on the Sunday, so I won't be around on our stand much of Sunday at all, but I'll certainly be there as much as I can on Saturday. And it's just going to be a great weekend. NorthernAnglianShow.co.uk for pre-sale tickets, or you can pay in the door. You can get in on the door from 10 a.m, but we normally let you in about 9:45 once the queue's gone from all the pre-sales. And yeah, Saturday or Sunday, but Sunday is the day of the Carpcast on stage, so come and see us. Come and see us. One of the many other people talking. Crowe's on. Corda are doing a bit. The Big Fish Off. Ali Hamidian. Dean Macy. Mark Holmes is on stage. Loads of people. If you want to see exactly who's there, northernanglishow.co.uk.
You've got and some drop-shotting bloke on as well, haven't you?
Yeah, we've got Paul Garner doing his underwater stuff and some law stuff. Yeah, we've got a fair bit of law stuff on there. And Matt Hayes and the Duke himself, Mick Brown, they're on. We're hoping to get Matt Hayes a little Carpcast interview as well for the future. We're going to be taking our portable mics. We're going to be getting as much content recorded as is humanly possible. It's going to be Mark's job on the stand. Keeps getting people. And if you come by the stand, we might record you and get you on there. On an Angling Show special.
Yeah, if you have a listener's question, we could record that as well.
Definitely, that's a good idea, yeah. If you've got any listener's questions, come to the Angling Show. We'll record you and we'll play you live on one of the upcoming Carpcasts.
Yeah, it has also just occurred to me, if you're listening to this on your commute to work on Monday morning, you've just missed one hell of a show.
Yeah, unlucky. There's always next year. So we sat down on Kevin Nash's Cops Lake, and I have with me the one and only Mr. Alan Blair, head honcho of Nash, and welcome back to the Carpcast. How
Thank
you doing,
you,
pal?
Mate. Yeah, all good, Jay. Nice to see you again, mate.
It is, yes. I had a bit of luck yesterday, which you did something above and beyond the call of duty, where you stripped half bollock naked and got in the lake in February.
Firstly, though, I've got to share a fucking... Not allowed to swear.
Firstly, yeah, you can swear.
Firstly, I've got to share a really nice moment with you, mate. We don't do enough fishing together, so to get the call, ow, I've got a chunk in there. You know, you had been here 2 hours, and off I come running down with Kev and Louis. You know, it's great to see that big smile on your face, mate. See that big fish in there. And yeah, of course, I went off to the lodge to look for a set of waders, but there weren't none. And yeah, in I went, mate. I wanted to get you some nice pictures.
And all in the course of duty, just to get some decent shots in the water, because it's so heavy, and me being weak, it's been a while since I've caught a 50-pounder.
I've actually had that fish, mate, and it is a big breeze block of a carp, and it's not particularly easy to hold. You know, you could have a longer fish that's a lot more balanced, and, you know, it's a fair play, Jay. It's not an easy one to get up for the camera.
It's a nice problem to have, isn't it, holding
50 pounds.
£50. You've fished this lake quite a bit over the last 12 months, haven't you?
Yeah.
Mainly stalking, or...
Oh, I like you. You made a comment. We stood and had a tea in reception yesterday, and you were like, 10 years I've waited for this. 10 years. Well, I can safely say I've waited 7 solid years for this. I've worked for Kevin for a long time. I've always respected the fact that he wanted to keep this one for his own fishing. You know, he's put the graft in for the last 35 years, and he absolutely deserves it. When I joined, very quickly, maybe after a year and a half, Kev said to me, "You can fish it, Al. Fish it when you want. You're not allowed to catch anything over 30 pounds." And he also offered the same to the other lads, people like Matt, people like Reedy, but they couldn't do it, you know, especially Nick. Like, yeah. Reedy is a liability. Like, so he knew very early on he just best off not fishing it at all, because, you know, the temptation to hook one of the big ones was always there. So my job for a number of years was to come on here stalking and floater fishing and try and remove the fish that had been brought on, because, you know, it was affecting the biomass quite badly. Kev wanted a lake with 15 big fish in, but when there was probably close to 70 to 100 fish in there. That's really destroying, you know, the biomass.
And they'd all just spawned in there.
Spawned on, all homebreds. So up until this year, or last year, sorry, I'd caught them to 29.15. How's that? Literally 29.15. I had once, I'll tell you a story actually, I don't even know if I've ever told Kev this story, but hopefully he does a bit. Once Steve Renyard was doing a feature for Advanced Carp on the Church Lake, and he was struggling, you know, as much as everyone thinks churching cops, back garden ponds, Jay, you'll know, mate, they're far from it, you know, when they're fishing, but when they're not, they're as hard as anywhere. And this particular weekend, Steve was really struggling, and I said to him, look, the best I can do, mate, you know, because he needed some pictures for this feature, was I can take you onto the cops, but you've got to catch a little one. And he said, okay, how'd you do it? Like, that'd be great. So I took him on, and we found a group of fish, and I proceeded to cast this slow sinking maggot out. And it fluttered down, and I lost sight of it, and I was just about to reel in when the line pulled tight, bang, fish on, and it turned out to be a very, very big mirror. And I played the fish in, I netted it, I unhooked it in the net, his jaw just dropped, and I let it swim back off without a photo, without weighing it, with nothing. And you know, I don't think Steve will ever forget that, Mr. Renyard, but yeah, I did. Yeah. Caught a lot of fish up until then, but yeah, last year, as you say, I was finally, like you, given the opportunity to come on here and do some fishing. The problem with me, Jamie, is once I've had a few, I kind of lose the buzz a little bit. So yeah, I caught that fish you had yesterday at 53, a most incredible mirror. I had the emperor, I had the wood carving, I had another big mirror at 46, and I've had probably 20 to 25 other sort of homebred fish up to 37 pounds. You know, I've had a 35 common, a 37 common, a 33 mirror, all of which are homebred fish in the lake.
I love how you gloss over the emperor and the wood carving, both what, mid 50 plus commons.
The emperor I had spawned out at 48, 49, something like that. And then the following day, Kev went on to catch it again. Both times actually on a new test bait. The wood carving, I had how I wanted to catch it. I always wanted to catch that fish off the surface, and I did. I caught it on a single free-lined mixer. Yeah, it's a blow you away carp, that one, Jay. And I really hope you've got another couple of days, mate. I hope that one graces your landing net, because it's a very, very impressive common. And I think there's every possibility you'll go over 60 pounds. Definitely.
Wow. I mean, that's I'm greedy to even want another fish, but you know, I caught a fish within kind of five minutes of that rod being out. It was the third rod that I'd put out, and I'd literally just finished catapulting. I put about four pouchfuls of boilies over it, and I'd sat down just to do the next rod, and it went. So all day today I've been catapulting little bits over the two rods that I think are on me kind of banker spots. Yeah, I've been catapulting bits over them all day, just in the hope. But I mean, catching one so early with three nights in front of you, it will feel like a blank if I go home, you know, without another bite. You know, I feel like I've not, you know, performed fished effectively. Obviously, it was great to catch one, but yeah. You know
what you do.
It's
next.
A three-night blank, yeah. On to the next one, but it's greedy. But that wood carving, man, I looked at the pictures on your Instagram yesterday. I was just like, oh, that is.
It's a machine. It's a big, big fish, and I think it's going to keep getting bigger.
I saw them one summer, 3 or 4 years ago, between the islands. So I stood up on the lodge, looking off the balcony there, and I saw that. I mean, how long do you think they are, like in feet? At least
four and a half foot. Massive fish, huge fish.
Like two submarines, aren't they? I just saw them between the islands. I couldn't believe what I was looking at. It was just like, wow.
Interesting, you know, back onto the cops, and, you know, I've waited all this time to fish here, and I always had a game plan, and it was pretty simple. I was going to fill it in with mixers and pick them off one by one, or go around with the slow sinking maggots. But something happened, you know, around 18 months ago, we started doing some work on the lake. Basically, we put a silt bund across and we dug out a new bay to give the fish a bit more room. It was an area of the lake they only rarely use, you know, maybe if they're spawning or if it was very hot. But, you know, to give them a bit more breathing space, so to speak, and allow a bit more biomass, we dug out this area. And the other thing that's changed and we've done differently is, as you'll know, a few years ago now, 3 years ago, we lost some big fish out of the church. The oxygen crash, it happens. But to try and prevent something like that ever happening again, Kev's installed aerators on the water to try and regulate the oxygen levels, etc. And last year, we ran the aerator all the time. Now, between those two things, the aerator running and the fact that we dug out this bay, it's kept the water clarity really murky, so I didn't have the visibility to do my stalking, and for some unknown reason they just won't take a floater anymore.
Really?
Kev's opinion is they've had a hammering. You know, he did a lot of fishing on the surface in Pursuit in the final account, but you know, and prior to that, people like Mark Holmes, I know he had the big and off a floater, and but in my opinion they've not been hammered, you know.
No.
Hammered is hammered, and I don't know what it is, Jay, but yeah, that was always my sort of ticket to success, really. Turn out with a load of riser, pellet and mixers and just go and pick off the ones I wanted, but other than the wood carving, I've not had a single fish off the surface.
Wow, at least you got the one.
I've got the one, yeah. Result.
Well, you've done a lot of zig fishing over the years.
Yes.
What's your views on murky waters for zigs? Do you find it's similar to floaters where it's not as effective, or have you not noticed a difference?
Nah, it's not as effective, you know. My views on zigging is there's two categories it'll fall into. One is you can get the fish feeding. Now, for sure, somewhere like Drayton, where you can put out a load of sloppy spod and there's already a huge amount of carp in the lake, you can bring the fish to the sound of the spawn crashing, the cloud in the water, the attraction, present a zig bait in amongst it. There's no actual food particles there for them to eat, just lots of attraction and cloud, and they eventually nail your hook zig hook bait as a result. And I see that as a competitive feeding situation. Other feeding situations where a zig would work, for example, on a nice warm day when the fish are already in the upper layers, you can drift the riser pellet out, those smaller bits are falling down through the water, and again creating a feeding situation. The third one being a true fly hatch, you know, on these natural waters, or pretty much any water, mate, at certain times of the year, primarily spring and in the autumn, you get these huge hatches going on, and the carp monopolise on it. They get on the hatch, they start munching, and again, putting a zig hook bait in amongst that, they'll come in and they'll eat it. That's one camp for zig rig fishing, and again, I think in all of those situations, other than for example a very high stock water, you really want decent visibility for them to be able to see the hook bait in the first place. The other side of zigging, and it's a side I believe why a lot of anglers won't fish a zig rig, because they see it as cheating or not counting, is the only way I can describe it, lure fishing. My theory on it is if you walked into your living room, Jay, when you get back from this session, and in the middle of your living room there's a helium balloon popped up off the floor,
yeah,
it weren't there when you left, what the hell is it doing there now? The first thing you're going to go over to, you're going to go and investigate it. What is this helium balloon doing here? You're going to touch it, you're going to grab it, you're going to lift it, you're going to move it, you're going to investigate it. Who has put this helium balloon in my living room? The house was locked.
Yeah.
How's it got here, you know? And there's a load of questions going through your mind. The same way as if a carp's lived in an environment for 5 years, 10 years, 50 years, and all of a sudden there's a little orange zig bug or a little black bit of foam or a little white pop-up suspended up off the bottom in their environment, why is it there?
Yeah.
What is that doing there? I've been here 15 years. How the hell has that just appeared here? And in those situations there, okay, if it's kicking out a load of attraction or it mimics a natural food source, they may well potentially eat it as a result of seeing it as a food source. But I think more often than not, they're just intrigued by it. They're curious, they haven't got hands like us, and they will eventually pop it in their mouth to look at it.
Yeah, that's the bit that's put me off zig fishing over the years, is it kind of feels like
cheating.
Yeah.
You're not the only one, mate. I think I'm sure I've had conversations with Johnny Mack about it. I know Matt at work, for example, would never chuck one out. No, you've got to create a feeding situation, you've got to put boilies on the bottom, you've, you know, great. But sadly, mate, I love catching fish, I love fishing, and if I can catch fish that way, they've put it in their mouth legitimately, and I've got a hook hold, I see that as a success.
Yeah, I'm coming round to it. You know, I have fished zigs over the last 3 years, and for the actual rod hours I've done on zigs, I've caught a lot of fish. Yeah. You know, compared to the rod hours I've done on the bottom.
Yeah.
You know, quite often I'll have one rod out on a zig and I'll get the only two bites of the session on it, and I've had three rods out on the bottom for two nights or something. So I'm coming round to it. One of the main things that brought me round to it was Ronnie de Groot. I know you probably spoke to a lot. We interviewed him.
He speaks a lot.
Yeah. He's a great storyteller.
He's a character, mate.
I love talking to Ronnie. Yeah. He was saying, he was actually telling a story about the church, actually. He was saying, I forget if it was him or somebody else when he was on the lake as well. And they fished X amount of time and they could only get the bites on the zigs, but they could only get the bites in one spot. It was a very small area they were getting zig bites in. And the zig wasn't like kind of on the surface, it was kind of the same depth as the weed. So he he replicated like boilies hanging in the weeds, you know, where you've baited up and you know, and all the food is hanging mid water. Well, the fish, they're not used to you know, being hooked at that, so they see it as completely safe. And that to me is a skillful way of fishing, where you're actually you're tricking them, you know, into, you know, he said he was fishing up alongside a weed bed at a certain depth.
I know who this was. I was there. This was a lad called Gio, and he came right, over and he was filming a piece for a Dutch TV channel. Correct me if I'm wrong, Gio, but he'd never used a zig before, but we all advised him, you know, they're ready to be nailed on a zig. And I think, again, I might slightly over exaggerate this, but I think it was between 15 and 18 takes he had, and the area was no bigger than your Titan.
Wow.
No bigger than your Titan.
And he couldn't get a bite anywhere else?
No, you know, and they were doing exactly that, Jay. They're coming off the weed bed, seeing a hook bait and nailing it. You know, and you've raised another point there, you know, the whole zig rig thing. For sure, if they've not been hammered on it, it's a massive edge, mate. You know, if they've been hammered for 10, 15 years on bottom baits, stiffings, rigs, choddies, snowmans, you name it, and then you've got a good angler who goes on there and he perseveres with a zig rig, he will catch more.
Yeah, for me, fishing is about the journey to get to the end thing. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if I walked onto, I don't know, any... I mean, it's kind of happened here this week, but you know, let's say I walked on, I was going to spend the next 3 years catching the Birdfield Common, right? That was my plan. I wanted to work the lake out, work out its habits, work out its patterns, hunt it and catch it, right? I'm going to enjoy that journey, and hopefully at the end of it is the euphoria and elation of catching that target. If I walked onto bang smack in the centre of the lake, put three zigs out, sat in that peg for an unlimited amount of time, there's a very good chance that when that fish swims past that at some point, it's going to eat it, you know, because, like say, curiosity. Now I've learned nothing. I've not studied that carp. I've not used info. For me, while I've still got the elation of having the picture and the fish in my net, like, for me, the journey is the working out, solving the puzzle of the lake. You know, the fish go here in these conditions, and they back off a northerly, but they get on the end of a southerly. You know, just working the puzzle out. For me, that's the hunting bit. That's why we enjoy fishing. It's that chase, and zigs take away some of that, I think. But if you know you're on fish and you're fishing on the bottom and you can't get a take, and all of a sudden you go, right, I'm going to try 1 4-foot off the bottom, and you caught it, that's different, because you've adapted.
I was just going to not argue with you but disagree with you, and you know, use Birdfield as an example. I've never fished it. I've seen it once, but let's say just a big pit, then a good angler would work out, and let's go back to the Birdfield, a good angler would work out where that fish is going to feed in the morning, in the afternoon, in the air, and it would work out the areas it's visiting to feed. The Birdfield Common does not feed on the bottom, grubbing around for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year.
No.
It doesn't. So a good angler would monopolise on the feeding times, make sure he was in the right area, on the right spots, with the right bait, and trying to catch it at those times. And then for the rest of his day, he would be knowing that the Birdfield Common's going to move from that bank to this set of snags, and then from this set of snags over into this quiet bay, and if it's pressured, it's going to go and hang out in this area, and then in those times could potentially go and try and nail it on a zig. And I think, I'm not proclaiming to be that angler, Jay, because we all get lazy sometimes, but I think if I go on a session and I fish like that, very, very focused, I'm fishing well in the feeding spells, and then I'm fishing equally as well when they're not feeding, to keep trying to keep my catch rate up.
Yeah, I agree. Like I said, I'm coming round to the idea of it. I mean, if I caught it on the bottom, you know, within the first hour of looking forward to it. Yeah, I mean, you'd be super chuffed, but I'd be a little bit lost. I remember catching the second 40 out of Elstow 2, it was the hardest lake I'd ever fished. It was a real grueling year. I started in February, you know, did a couple of periods of 2 months without a bite. You know, the whole lake didn't do a bite for 8 weeks, a couple of times during the year. You know, it was tough. And I remember just kind of was getting to grips with it, working out how to catch the fish. I'd had about 5 or 6 bites at this point in October, and I got a bite, ended up catching the twin, which was the second 40. I'd already had the mother. I remember feeling disappointed because I was looking forward to another year on the lake, having worked out, like, this is what I need to do to catch fish. And I'd started catching fish, and I caught it. I'm like, well, there's a few of the 30s I've not caught yet, but could I justify...
So you needed to move on, right?
I was going to stay another season, and I remember saying to my pal Roger, I'm going to stay another year on there. He's like, why? You caught both the 40s. I was like, yeah, but I didn't catch Lisa and I didn't catch the import and I didn't catch that. And he's like, do you think Terry Earn stays on a lake after he's caught the two biggest fish in the lake? You know, he goes and catches the two biggest fish in the next lake. You know, and if he hadn't have said that, I'd have still been there now probably trying to catch more. But it goes to show that it's, you know, it's the, yeah, I was on there to catch a 40, you know, my first ever 40 as it was, but I do want to hunt, you know, I want the challenge of having to work it out. And when I've worked it out, I then want, you know, you want to have that red letter day, that mega session where you catch something.
I think, you know, angling, it's a very personal thing. You know, you've got your opinions on what makes it right or wrong, and another person's got another opinion, and some people like to go hunting, other people like to go camping, other people like to fish the busy circuit waters in pursuit of the largest, whereas others want to just go and get a bend in the rod. And I think that's one of the great things about fishing, Jay. You know,
yeah, it ticks all the boxes, doesn't it?
Football, I've never been into football, but, you know, my understanding is there's a goal at either end, there's a load of blokes on each team, and they're all doing the same thing week in, week out. You know, they go to training and then they go and do it all again, and fishing's so different, man. So different, you know.
Yeah, and it ticks all the boxes. I mean, what you described there, like the different angles of fishing, I do all of those every year. Sometimes I just want to camp. I just want to go and sleep for 4 days.
Yeah, barbecue, beer, socialising.
Not fussed. I put the rods out once a day, and yeah, I'm not even bothered if they go. Another day, I just want to bend in the rod. I'll quite happily go to a local park lake or somewhere that I know has got nothing bigger than 15 pound in, and happily catch fish all day.
Put it into perspective.
Yeah, and then some days I'd want to go and blank for 2 years after a 50. Yeah. You know, quite happily not get a bite.
That's what makes it so magical. You know, you can do so many different things within fishing, within carp fishing, to always keep yourself motivated and enjoy it.
So where are you at now then? Because obviously a lot of your fishing has to revolve around what, you know, you're extremely what's the word I'm looking for? It's not important, but I'll use that for now. I can't think of a word. You're an extremely important factor in Nash Tackle these days. So a lot of your personal fishing must revolve around what's good for the company. You know, do I need to go filming here? Do I need to do an article? Or
I can't remember the last time I went carp fishing for myself. I can't remember the last time I went carp fishing and didn't think, I need to get some content for Instagram. I need to consider how I can get a magazine article out of this. I need to make sure the boys are ready to film if it goes. That's the nature of my job.
Yeah.
My pleasurable fishing, if I want to go and enjoy my fishing, I'll always go to the river. I'll always go to the river and I'll just stick float fish or go with a couple of quiver tip rods, and that's my fishing. You know, carp fishing goes hand in hand with the job, mate. Me personally, it was a few years ago now I realised the nature of the type of angling I enjoy does not work on a circuit water. I remember when I joined the company, Kev bought me a manor ticket, very prestigious Essex syndicate, to fish with some huge fish in. I did 3 or 4 nights and vowed never to step back on there again. To the point now, I'm very good friends with Steve O'Rourke, who holds a lease of another guy on there, and he's forever saying to me, go over, Al, you go flip the rods up. Not interested, you know. But I absolutely take my hat off to the guys that are going there week in, week out, putting the hours in, putting the graft in, and reaping the rewards. And I just won't have that photo album, Jamie. You know, you've got an impressive photo album. You've done, like you say, the Elstow, the St. Ives. You've been around the country and fished. For me, all the pleasure goes whenever I find myself in that situation. You know, it's the drive. Yeah. I love the butterflies in your stomach of preparing your gear, getting everything ready, jumping in the motor and then driving there knowing that you're going to get the rods out. The problem with fishing those types of waters is all too often you'll arrive in the car park and you can't get on the fish.
Well, I've picked waters that are low stock, so they only attract a certain type of angler. I mean, Elstow, you know, majority of the time there's me and Mark Watson on there, nobody else, you know. Yeah, it's 35 acres. You were unlucky if there's 4 people in total, including you, you know. And most of the lakes I've fished, they have kind of been like that. I've avoided the ones, like you said, the Essex Manor. Yeah, I've gone for the low stock ones. St. Ives was busy in the spring, but numerous times I caught fish, I was the only person on the lake. When I caught the lady, me and Roger, that was it. You know, it was 1st of November. I had a go at Yateley Car Park Lake. The first bite, first time I caught one of the big mirrors, was the 1st of December, only person on the lake. You know, that's that's where I enjoy it. I'll go through the motions in the year when it's busier. St Ives in the spring, there was 16 people on one week. It was just like, wow, this is not really for me. I didn't fish it the following year until the last week in October. We came down with Roger. He just got a ticket, showed him around the lake. We saw fish jump. And we're like, right, let's come back next week. You know, we've seen action. Came back next week. We're the only people on the lake and ended up catching the big one. So I'm the same as you, really. Like, I've avoided, you know, the Wellington Country Parks and the absolute circuits.
The other thing I've definitely learned, because that's the other thing with fishing. You never stop learning, no doubt about it. You're always learning. But one of the fundamentals I've learned in the last few years is, it's like very, very similar to the conversation we started off with about you having a 50 very quickly, and now you've got potentially three nights ahead of you and you don't want a blank because you'll see it as a three night blank.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things, you know, if I want to play to my strengths is, do not go on long sessions, or if you do go on a long session, disrupt the session somehow. If that means going into a rave in the middle of it all and then going back to the fishing, or packing up and going home and seeing the kids, or going to do half a day's work, but somehow break that session up. So when you come back, it's almost like you're starting a new session again. I've had far too often in years gone by, I've managed to get 3 days off or 4 days off or a week off, and you go there, first day, didn't work out, who cares, always got tomorrow. Second day, didn't quite work out, don't matter, there's always the next day. And before you know it, the week or the session's come to an end and you've failed dismally. Whereas if I go, for example, to my local park lake for 2 hours on a Sunday morning, I've got 2 hours to make it happen, and you do everything in your power to make it happen. The same as if I'm going on a work overnighter, I might have 7, 8, 10 hours before I've got to be back in work. You've got to make it happen. And I find, you know, I don't see myself as a lazy person, far from it, but when I know I've got the time ahead of me, instantly you become lazy, because you know, if it don't work out today, there's always
procrastinating, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Because you've got that time. Yeah, I've known a lot of very short session anglers that outfish, you know, people that do three nights a week on the same lake. Yeah. You know, they come down for one night a week, but
focus,
really focus. Yeah. They'll move during that 24-hour period, you know, as many times as they need to get on the fish, and they just use those hours because they're precious. And yeah, I've done it myself. I mean, I've always tried to do long sessions because I do enjoy the camping side of it as well. You know, I like being there, and I've always been a session angler, and I've normally had to travel as well, so, you know,
got to make it worth your while.
Yeah, but I quite agree, you know. It's like, oh, I've got all this kit with me now because I'm on a long session, and do I want to shift it around the other side of the lake? But
you've got a quad here.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty easy on here. Going back to what you're saying about the family and stuff, you've had another nipper since, in fact, yes, you've had...
Two little girls now.
Yeah, you had one the last time you spoke, I think. So, yes. You had a very iconic picture of you holding your first daughter and a fish in the middle of winter.
Yeah.
And then when you had the second one, I saw an equally as good picture with two. I mean, how's that affected the fishing? You know, obviously it's an amazing feeling being a dad. I have that feeling myself. You know, how's it changed your life generally?
I'll be honest. Had Maya, was our first, had her in November, sort of got through the initial couple of months, finding our feet, new parents and all that. And then when the spring and the summer come round, I didn't fish, Jay, like I did in the past. I didn't, you know. If you go back 2 or 3 years ago, I would be out potentially 5-6 times a week for an hour here, 3 hours there, 2 hours there, all evening, after work, go out, bit of float fish. And I didn't do it because I actually really enjoyed going home, spending time with Chloe. And, you know, when you've got a very busy full-time job, sometimes 10, 12, 14 hours a day, just to be able to get that 1 hour with her before she goes to bed, it actually meant a lot, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, my fishing has taken a little bit of a backseat. However, I wouldn't say it's stopped, far from it, because it's in my blood. It's what I do, and Chloe understands that. So I'm still out there fishing as much as I can, but for sure, you know, I've had to make sacrifices, as any father would. You know, Sunday just gone, I've just been in Zwolle all weekend, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, got off the plane Sunday morning, and yeah, I could have rushed down the lake and gone fishing, but what, you know, you wouldn't. I went home, I spent, you know, a few hours with the girls, and it was nice, and I'll get out this week for an overnighter, and you know, I'm fitting it all in. You've got to fit it all in, you know. If you love it that much and you care about your family, there's a balance there somewhere. And
yeah, and it's so rewarding as well, isn't it? Having children is literally the most rewarding thing you can ever do. Better than catching any 50.
Yeah.
I had my daughter 15 years ago, so I want to see how good the wood carving feels.
But yeah, you know, it swings and roundabouts, because I don't know if you saw, we went to Belgium last year. I took Chloe and Myra over to Belgium, and yeah, we had an amazing time. We went for 3 days and we pitched up, and I set a big double top up for them and a gazebo, and we had barbecues every day, and we shot out in the day to have a nice cappuccino or whatever, and then back to the lake. And that's my future now, Jamie. Two girls, Chloe and me, and, you know, my van's here at Volkswagen headquarters. Where is my transporter? But I'll get my van, and, you know, we'll go off to Belgium again this year. We're going to go to Ireland. I want to do a bit of piking in Ireland. And the next however many years will see me and the girls travelling around the world fishing.
Yeah. You know,
and that's never going to change. As much as sometimes it does wind Chloe up, like, can't we just have a holiday? No, babe. Like, anywhere we're going,
it's got to be water.
The rods with us. Like, and, you know, I don't want the girls to grow up as, I'm not going to force it on them as anglers, but I think I will try my hardest to get them to understand it, because I think it's more than just holding up a monster fish at the end of it. It's about understanding all the nature that goes with it, and looking after the wildlife and the environment, not dropping litter. There's more morals deeper within angling than, you know, actually holding up for a trophy shot.
That was a big one for me, actually, the litter. You know, from being a young child and you're playing in the street, and then, you know, I was a kid in the 80s, we had bits of lino out spinning on our head, break dancing with like boom boxes when I was a kid. It was a hip hop era. And all the breakdance films on TV and stuff. And like, you wouldn't think about it. There used to be a sweet van that came round, and, you know, you'd buy ice cream or sweets or whatever, and you'd peel a wrapper off and sling it, you know, as kids. Yeah. You didn't even think about it. And spending time on lakes, you know, I was a really serious fisherman from sort of 10 years old. You know, I was totally addicted by 11, was going every night after school. And, you know, you see litter in pegs and stuff, it makes you
pick it up.
Yeah.
If I walk into a peg and there's loads of litter, and my dad taught me this, the first thing I do is pick it up. It weren't mine, I didn't put it there, but the least I can do is clear up after someone else, you know.
Yeah, so it's a good thing. I mean, fishing gave me those morals of not spoiling the countryside. And I'm driving up the motorway now and I see somebody sling a bag of rubbish out the window, and it fumes me.
Yeah,
it makes me angry inside, because, like, the world, it's not a finite place, you know. We're using up the resources. There's, what's that, 5 Mile Island in the middle of the sea where all the plastic always gathers, you know. And we don't realise, when we produce stuff, like, we look at plastic, it doesn't degrade. Like, it's going to stay there forever.
You know, your daughter, not that we do it, but, you know, these people that are out there still littering and not respecting the environment, you're only ruining it for future generations, which is wrong.
I mean, you know, we think of our life as being the be all and end all, because you're on this planet for 78 years if you're lucky, and like, but
will we make it that far?
Well, I'm gonna try. I mean, when I was at college, I was 18 19, I was like, if I live till 30, I'll be happy.
I remember thinking exactly the same.
And then at 30, you're like, well, this is all right,
it'll be good. Right? Yeah.
I'm still doing all the stuff, you know. I'm 40 odd now, and I'm like, wow, if I went before 60, I'd be devastated. You know, life's pretty good, I enjoy doing the things that I do, you know. Honestly, my daughter get older and I've grandchildren, and I guess that's just the innocence of youth, when you think, like you say, everything focuses around you, and as you get older,
very selfish when you're young, aren't you?
Yeah, very selfish.
Very selfish, Jamie. It's, when I look back on the way I've treated my parents and stuff, and, you know, the utter disrespect I showed to them, and how I've matured now, it's one of my biggest regrets in life. And I know you shouldn't have any, but that would be one of them, you know, the utter selfishness I had for other individuals.
I think it's a regret that probably every intelligent human being has, because it's a natural thing to be selfish. Kids are very demanding, but what you've probably noticed from yours is it doesn't matter when she's throwing a tantrum. Like, it's, as a parent, it doesn't hurt you that they're, no, get off, I don't want to come near you, or what. I mean, yours are very young, but when they're a bit older,
no,
you know.
I'm going to be very conscious of how I behave. Very conscious, and I'm ready for the next 18 years of my two girls growing up, and I'm always going to remember back to how I was. And
yeah, I was the same as a little shit, and I regret it every time I think about it, you know. I was having a a little thing this morning, just daydreaming, and I was thinking about some of the stuff I did as a teenager, one of the stages that I went through, and I was thinking I was a little shit, you know. Like, it made me feel bad.
It's embarrassing, isn't
it? Yeah, it made me feel regretful, thinking, you know, what can I do to put that right? And but the fact is probably everybody goes through you know, that period, and you'll understand it when your kids do it as somebody that did it themselves. And you know I almost certainly rejected my parents, and you know, was like I say, a little terror at times, just super selfish. No, we're not doing that, we're doing this. And your parents, as parents who love the children unconditionally, you just go along with it, don't you? And it doesn't hurt. Like, you know, I think back now, thinking of my feelings, thinking I must have really hurt them, but probably didn't, because they probably did it when they were young.
Just on that note, though, the whole selfish thing, I was thinking only recently, that's probably the bit I liked least about fishing. You know, all too often everyone's talking about what they love about fishing, but I think for me the bit I like least about it is that selfish element. And I'm talking here personally, I'm still very selfish. You know, I will keep secrets, I will get to the lake before others if I can, I will pull strokes, and as much as it can be deemed as just a bit of banter amongst mates, actually this is me being truthful to you, Jay, I'm still very selfish. You know, I'm going out there with an aim, I want to catch more than everyone else, or I want to catch that big one. And I think people get hurt along the way, you know, as much as blokes can shrug it off and that, but when you're close to someone, like a good friend, even very good friends, if I'm fishing with Reedy or whatever I'd class as a best, I would still go above and beyond to make sure I caught more than him.
You're in the peg you needed to be.
There's a great one, getting that peg before them. You know? And I think,
what time are you getting there? 9 o'clock Saturday morning. I'm there Friday night.
Yeah, I'm there. Are you? Yeah. Are you like that?
Me, Roger, all the good anglers are. No, but you have to, though. Yeah, like,
no, but that's, to me, that's the worst thing about fishing, I think.
The horrible
is a strong word, but the selfishness you show towards people you would class as really close and really good friends, and you'll still do it. I will still do it in order to be, you know, stand myself a better chance of catching.
I mean, making other people happy is a good feeling, but like, I can't make anybody happy until I make myself happy. Like, you know, if you're a miserable person, you know, if you're a failure yourself, it's very hard to you know, to pass on your things that you've learned to other people. So I think go and catch them yourself, and then say, look, if you fish on that spot on this day. But we've got to get there first and do it for ourselves. I think every good hunter, every good angler has got that in them. You know, I've watched John Mack move in the middle of the night, you know, because the winds change, and everybody, you know, as soon as everyone wakes up in the morning, everyone's going to know you need to be in that peg. And I've seen him, you know, he's, by the time you thought about it, he's done it, you know. Roger Bacon, exactly the same. We used to have games, right? We'd all plan to get there on a Monday morning on a lake, and we'd start arriving from Friday to Monday, just to make
sure
there'd be three of us, like, and it'd be like, right, Roger said he's gone at 9 o'clock, I'm going to make sure I get there at like midnight, 9:04, and sleep in the car park. And then Dave's gone, Roger said he's gone at 9, that probably means 6, that means Jamie's going to go here, I need to go Thursday. Just to make,
that's getting ridiculous.
It, when we all fished Elstow too, it was a running joke, you know. It was, you couldn't, like, you just stopped asking, when are you going, because the games would start then. Because like I say, if you're good anglers, you'll kind of know where you need to be.
Everyone's,
you know,
aiming for the same thing, isn't it, to catch a specific fish or getting those best pegs.
And yeah, and there's, you know, if you know there's a brand new southeasterly, everybody's been on the weather, everyone knows the low pressure coming, everyone knows the two pegs they need to be in, there's three of you trying to get in them. So like, at some point, you're either going to be the person that's liked the most by everybody on the lake and blank all year.
Not part of the game.
Yeah. You know, you can be everybody's best mate and be unsuccessful. It's very hard to be, like, moving on to, like, even business and stuff. Like, if you're going to be successful in anything, you've got to be true. You've got to be driven, focused, and being that way kind of can upset people because... So, you know, but like I say, with fishing, it's so personal. People go for different reasons. I've gone where I'm really happy to let me mate have the best peg, and I'm happy to blank because I just want to be there or enjoy the social, the company.
It's fishing the lake's £15.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, I'll get other times. If I'm like, you know, if I'd pitched up on Birdfield for the year, I'm going to be, you know, I'm spending £100 a week travelling to get there and back,
make it
plus the cost of everything else and the time, you know, the stress of driving 4 hours each way, stress of being away from my family for 3 nights a week, I'm going to do everything I can to catch that fish, you know. And if that means stitching somebody else up, yeah mate, I've seen fish over there, see you later. You know, it's going to be done. I don't really feel guilty about that. It's, you know, I am very conscious human being of other people's feelings. I always try and do the right thing these days. Maybe a bit of that's guilt from being a little shit when I was younger. But when it comes to like fishing, I don't feel guilt for that. And I've started playing poker in the last couple of years, and poker's another good example of having to be ruthless. You're having to take other people's chips to win. Like, the name of the game is to deceive them.
Yeah, but they're not your friends.
No, they're not. But when I started playing on the cash table, and I first started playing, you just feel guilty for winning a pot. So especially if you knew somebody was losing, they were just like,
they can't pay their mortgage next week because of
it. Yeah, and they were making bad decisions because they were angry that they were losing. Like, I remember like not making a bet when I had the best possible hand, and I knew the guy had the second best possible hand, and he was really wanted to call me. I've made a really big bet, like £100 or something on the end. It's like a £400 pot, and I'm like, just fold mate, I've got the best hand. He's like, and he thought that was a game. I'm like, because he's got the second best hand, I knew he had the second foot. I'm like, fold, I'll show you. Like, I know you can't afford it, I know you're tilting. Like, he reluctantly folded, and I showed him. I had the king of hearts, the ace of hearts was on the board, and I had a flush, and he showed me the queen of hearts. Like, I lost £100 there by feeling guilty, because I knew he was just and running really bad.
A year or two down the line, would you
2 years
it?
Down the road, I fleece every last penny
them.
Because it's a game. So
yeah, that's more business though. They're not your friends, like.
No they're not. But I think that was part of my nature of not being greedy, not wanting to take every last possible cent in the middle. You know, it was like, this is enough, I'm happy with that. It's, you know, there's £250 in the pot, do I need to make it 400 now? I mean, that's the name of the game, because I understand the maths of it now, and you don't get a chance to win X amount of money, and you have your losing days where you do everything right and still lose. So you have to maximise the chances when you're winning, because, you know, it's basically how the stock market works. For every, there's an expected value for every pound you spend, you're expected to win 20p. So it doesn't matter if I made £300 or £400 there, over a million times that situation occurs, I'm going to make an average of 20% profit. So to make that 20% profit, I'm going to lose at points, even with the best hands. So I'm going to have to, you know, maximise the other chances. And it's just a logical maths decision. But my human nature decision was, oh, I'm happy with that. That's enough. I'm not greedy. You know, I've never gone out for the ultimate greed. It's like, and if I get something good, I want to share it with my mates as well in the business. What would be the point of me being super rich and all my mates not able to go on holiday with me next week? Or like, I'd want to, if I got onto something good, I'd share it with them.
I think, you know, relating that to fishing, I would say I'm very similar like that. If I come across the water, I'm always the first, and the lads in the office would say, I've put up loads of them onto waters, I always want to share it with someone.
Yeah.
But then when I get there with them, I definitely want to be in the best peg, and I definitely want to have a bait edge, and I definitely
well, we've just got onto a lake recently that, you know, you've had the same info, and we start, you know, the first thing I did was like, there's no point me going down this lake every week, I want to share it with my mates. So, you know, Roger actually fished there before me, and Dave's on there this week with Roger, you know, which is like my two sort of closest fishing pals. And what's the point of me going down there and hauling 40s, you know, if like,
you want to share it with someone.
Yeah, but the games have started. It's like, don't I found a spot last week that I had about 14 bites off, and
Roger know where it is?
He's on that spot now.
Oh, I see you. Go on, Roger.
He's sat on that spot right now, and I feel a bit sick. But he thinks it's his spot because he went, well, you know, do you not remember me telling you that I might have seen a fish the week before, and that was in the area that I saw it? I was like, no. I went in the peg. You went in your first choice peg. I was blanking. I found a spot off to the right. Now you're trying to claim it as yours. You're sat in it with three rods on it. But that's the game, isn't it? We're mates. It is a game, and it's a bit of fun. But the point is, I wanted to share that lake. As soon as I found it, you know, it's like, what's the point of me going there on my own, or having this sweet lake that's, again, pretty untouched? You know, you'll be the same when you go down there. You have to ring me and let me know what time you're going. But, yeah, I mean, there's been selfish, and there's... but I think the fishing is a different kind of selfish. It's just that I want to put myself in pole position. It's not that, you know, I want to rub my mate's face in it when I've caught the 50. It's not that. It's you know, I want to it's important for me. You know, you wouldn't be a good angler if you didn't have that streak through you. You know, it's like I say, we've rambled on about that quite long, you know. I'm a good person, but don't...
You talked about that for too long, Jamie.
Yeah. I'm a good person, but don't go fishing with me. I think that's the long and short of it.